Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! Welcome to the show! The explosion's back! We got our explosion back! It's been gone for so long! This is Action Movie Anatomy. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. We have special guests. We have so many special guests that I'm so excited. This is Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, the online network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. And this is Action Movie Anatomy, a movie show where we talk about the most explosive and exciting movies, even if it is just emotionally. This one.
Exactly. Emotional explosions.
Yeah, I'm Ben Bateman, joined by my trust co-host, Andrew Guy.
What's up, guys? Happy to be back. Happy to talk Taking. And look at our friends we got today. We got friends. We got two of them.
We have two special guests.
My mom and my sister. I was talking about them. Yeah, I know.
Would you like to introduce your family, Andrew?
Yeah, so this is my beautiful mother, Sue, and my awesome sister, Leslie, who is also beautiful, but I wanted to use a different adjective.
Your adjective use is terrible.
It's horrible.
Just awful.
They're nice. Thanks for coming.
I like them.
And we have the folks from Guilty Movie Pleasures. We just guested on their show, and they're here. We have Josh McCuga and Ben Begley.
Yeah, I was absent from my own show. That was real fun.
Good job.
I did great, you know, just a ghost man on second work in the baseball.
Just shut up.
You were good.
I don't understand the reference, sir. I apologize.
Yes.
If you were in the middle of a joke, you can finish it.
No, it's okay. It was a joke about baseball.
Ben's comedy schemings is like he gets a punchline and then he just trails off.
Did I catch a niner?
And here's the punchline.
This is fun. I've never had someone on my right and my left on the show before. This
is going to be like a ping pong
going back and forth.
Hello. I'm just going to go gangbang, but...
come on!
Okay, sorry.
My mother is here!
Mother Sue is here!
Yep. That was the only inappropriate thing I'll say. I'll show up.
Oh, definitely. I doubt it. Well, you started off with gangbang. Yeah. How much worse could it get?
I'm top and I'm going bottom.
So, guys, this is a show where we talk about action movies. And today we were talking about a movie called The Taking of Pelham 123 from 2009. It's a remake. It's a movie that I love. I have a penchant for this film. It's one of my favorite movies. And
Ben, the same way that I was like dying to do Gladiator, Ben wanted to do Taking a Pelham 123.
Which should speak volumes about our personalities.
You're comparing the Taking a Pelham 123 to
Gladiator.
That's what I'm saying. Gladiator is my favorite movie of all time. Like, hands down. Ever.
Even over Braveheart?
I do love Braveheart. Those are like the two.
I think Braveheart's better than Gladiator.
I think we can discuss
also, like, Boogie Nights in there.
I think we can discuss the virtues of Commodus versus Ryder. I don't know. I mean, they're close in villain.
Very similar.
We choose movies on the show that adhere to four basic rules. So other than being made after 1981, the hero always plays by their own rules. That is rule number one. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or beings or things or aliens or whatever in the room. Rule number three, one that we just kind of changed and updated a little bit, is that the movie is driven by a police, military, mercenary, or political figure. What that means is he either is the man or works for the man, which is why this movie applies, because he works for the man.
Ben just changed the rules for the show for this movie as well.
And then the movie contains a minimum of at least one explosion, which is funny because this movie doesn't have an explosion.
It has car crashes, but I would also argue that...
Does car crashes include explosions?
Emotional explosions?
Would you say...
In my heart while watching?
Sure.
Would you say, though, that the hero plays by his own rules? Or
he took a bribe!
Or by John Travolta's rules until the very end. For most of it, he's just playing by John Travolta's rules.
No, he's definitely playing by his own rules.
Really?
He doesn't. He refuses to be talked to with disrespect.
Listen,
he engages
the only
him
way
like
that
a man.
I can agree with you on this one is that it's Denzel Washington and he plays by his own rules in every movie and life
at all times.
Yes.
So before we get into the show and show the trailer, I should remind everybody that there are other shows on the Popcorn Talk Network. We have gentlemen from one of them here, Guilty Movie Pleasures. There's also Anatomy of a Movie that's out every Friday, and they cover like the brand new movies of the week, kind of similar to what we do. Find us on iTunes. We have, I think, 18 reviews now, and once we get to 20, we're going to stop giving mugs away. But we have two more random entries. We're going to give another mug away.
We should get the last two mugs.
Yeah, right.
Now I'm saying we should have people review our show on iTunes and give away mugs. We don't pay for the mugs.
Finger emojis. Fuck you guys.
We baited our fans into giving us ratings to give mugs away.
It's the only reason people actually watch this show is to get mugs.
We went from zero ratings and reviews to like 20 of each when we started giving mugs away. So we're going to give another mug away at the end of the show today. So go do that and check out these guys' show. And
I'm going to start giving away DVDs from my DVD collection.
I have so many.
I don't need them.
I only have two. I can't give any more away.
It's okay. We'll just pretend some of them are from yours.
Oh, okay.
And I have Tremors 2, Tremors. I bought the value pack.
Dude, Tremors is awesome. You guys could come on Guilty Movie Pleasures again and talk Tremors.
Yeah, definitely.
Fred Ward. Love Fred Ward. Kevin Bacon. Excellent.
Michael Gross?
Let's show the trailer for The Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, and then get into the show.
Do it.
Just Tony Scott all up in your faces. Yeah.
I hate that frame rate he uses over
it's
and over.
It's crazy, over, right? Over and over again. He just used it for 5 movies straight.
Yep. Domino, almost the entire movie is that.
Dude, it's so gritty, though. It's so gritty and stylized.
And there's nothing better than a Travolta mustache.
Travolta is so not intimidating ever in this
it's
movie.
And the fact that 99 Problems is the song the movie opens on.
He's more intimidating trying to say your name at an award show than he is actually in an action movie.
His facial hair for a while there was just like a...
Open the door. Atrocity. Do it now or I'll fucking kill you right now. I'll fucking kill you.
Was it Swordfish where he had the super soul patch?
Yeah. Oh, man. So dirty in that movie.
This you don't realize how much facial hair goes into this movie. Oh, Denzel with the goatee.
Extreme facial grooming.
This is the man who is going to give this city a run for its money.
I love it. God, I love this movie.
It's not a good movie.
I don't understand Wall Street, but I'm pretty sure it makes no sense what happens.
I don't either. I just went with it.
What's the better trailer, this or the new Star Wars trailer? Probably
this.
I was Airborne is pretty solid, but I mean, I was going to go with Star Wars. Close second, Pelham 1, 2, 3. Here's the one thing that makes this movie a little weaker. John Turturro, to me,
is so pointless.
Yeah.
He's actually, he left this movie to go and film Transformers the same day. Yeah. Same outfit.
Just the
same role. He just basically comes in and goes, I'm going to do some stuff. Oh shit, I can't do anything. Never mind, you're going to do some stuff now.
I'll be up.
I'm going to give you that nod. I'm going to give doing things
two
right.
Two lines of advice.
Yeah. The trailer looks so much more exciting than the movie actually is while watching.
Oh, yeah.
My friend, Jerry Hughes, was operating. That's Jerry.
Oh, Phil? Phil Ramos.
You know why? Because they cram in a montage of every single of that one long police chase.
This trailer gives away more than the Southpaw trailer.
Yeah.
And like Denzel running.
This is enough of a car crash explosion.
Yeah, I know. The whole time that it was happening, Ben was just like, it's got to be an explosion. That car's got to blow up.
Like the Simpsons fall on the ground.
My God, that literally gives away the entire movie.
Yeah. Like he's got the gun out of the bag. He's on a bridge.
I'm glad I didn't watch that before watching the movie.
I've been very upset.
Tony Scott was like, don't
hear the movie. Can I just say the ambulance crash? Like, just logic. All emergency frequencies would know where this caravan of $10 million is going. There wouldn't be an accidental ambulance like, oh, shit, we got to get this patient. Oh, oops.
Right.
And then launch it off a bridge.
You would get a police escort, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it was absurd. That was just like, well, like you guys said, we got to throw an explosion or something in.
Yeah, it just had to make it exciting. So, the format of the show here, guys, is we're going to start with a thesis statement.
Okay.
And this is like a bold statement, something that you have decided about the movie that is, shouldn't be rooted in like something soft. It should be kind of like hyperbole. This is the best example of this, or this is the greatest X, Y, or Z. It's kind of the way we do the show.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm gonna go first.
Oh yeah,
how you feel about that?
Go ahead. I have
a good one. I'm gonna
write
mine out. I gotta come up with one. It doesn't have to do exactly with this movie. It just is that Tony Scott is the most specifically stylized director of our time.
Over Michael Bay,
over the Camerons, over the Spielbergs, like the field, because all those movies and all those directors have like their thing that they do. And Michael
over
Bay,
Wes Anderson.
Even over Wes Anderson.
That's wow.
You watch this statement. You watch this trailer, and the first thing that you... What was the first thing that you said, Ben?
Jay-Z.
The frame rate. Yeah. It was a very... Jay-Z.
Sorry.
The very first thing that you noticed was the frame rate. And then it goes right into the music. It goes into the cuts. It even has the times on there in the trailer. He is literally the exact same for these three movies. Deja Vu, Unstoppable, and Taking.
Man on Fire is a little different.
A little different, but they still
older.
Do it a lot.
Oh,
they
Man,
do a
Man
lot of
Fire
those quick cuts.
It's a phenomenal
Man on Fire. That's my favorite.
One of my favorite movies.
So, that's mine.
I'll jump on yours because, again, they tend to be a little related even though we don't prepare them together. It's funny. Yeah. Like, they're always... So what I would say is on the show...
We hang out sometimes.
Yeah. We look for movies on the show that hit the middle category, and that's legitimately ridiculous. That's like the ultimate action movie category where it's sort of like... It's that level of ridiculous meets that level of awesome, and there's one really good performance in there. The Rock is the example we always use.
Right.
This movie...
Dwayne Johnson, you mean, right?
Yeah. Yes. Dwayne Johnson. I would say that Tony Scott, the tone of this movie, is more indicative of that intersection than any movie that I've ever watched.
And this, you mean his movies?
His movies, and this movie in particular. Mm-hmm. It is more indicative of that legitimately ridiculous tone. Like, he is the king of tone.
Yeah.
And, like, this movie does not specifically match what we do on the show because it's sort of missing some of the action. It doesn't really have the format of, like, a Die Hard or something like that.
Or the feel.
Yeah, but the way this movie feels when you're watching it, the kind of, like, heavy-handedness of the emotional, like, the interactions between those two characters, the way it looks, everything about it.
It feels like an action movie, yeah.
100%, yeah. And it's not. It's just two guys talking on the phone for the most part.
Yeah.
You guys went real murky. In the sense of, like, you said you wanted a one thing. You guys explained your thing. I'm just going to go in one statement here.
Do it.
This is the most forgotten, unforgettable movie ever made.
Oh, that's great. Okay. I like
I'll
that.
Take it.
That's
very good.
I'm going to go back to murky.
Classic Beckley. Hold on.
This is the almost exact opposite of Speed. Because... Okay. Because Keanu is on the walkie instead of Dennis Hopper, and Dennis Hopper is on the bus/train, but in this case, it is not moving anywhere, it's just stagnant, and it's just talking the whole time, and there's no real, like, in Speed, there's an escalation of, like, everything goes wrong that can go wrong. Right. This is just kind of like, I'm going to shoot somebody else, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, you didn't do it. I'm going to shoot somebody else, motherfucker. And then, like, don't shoot anybody else, okay?
Yeah, that's a pretty good day.
You got to do the Travolta's, motherfucker.
Yeah. Every time he says it.
Let me take this track.
And then Luis Guzman just saying, I think today is the day I'm going to die.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Like, oh, gee, I wonder if that's foreshadowing.
You got to put your hands up here for Guzman, though. You got to, like, cut the belly.
It's literally the opposite of Speed.
It is. That's very good.
It's like they took Speed and then said, let's do everything that movie did and flip it around.
Yeah.
Let's just flip it around.
I just feel like with this, I guess instead of getting so murky with my point, I guess my feeling is that this
I
is not...
I didn't mean to insult you guys.
I'm leaving mine at murky. Okay?
Not at all.
He likes to come on people's show and just insult away.
Fuck you guys. Oh, sorry.
I guess my point was... Okay, Travolta swears enough. I guess my point was that it's like, this is not a movie that really is our show, but it feels more like our show than most of the movies we've ever done on this show.
Okay. Yeah.
It just feels like it.
It has that intensity to it.
Yeah.
It's almost like a David Mamet play, but with like a lot of cuts and...
Was it the same streaming play that he had to play the gay hairdresser with the mustache? Yeah. Is that that same
it's
play?
A very good play. It's called Fear and Loathing in a Basement.
Is that for real?
That's really the name.
Wow.
Fear and Loathing in a Basement.
I don't know if you guys know, but Ben was also in a movie called Fear and Loathing in a Basement. It was on the Hallmark Channel, right? To follow
him. How dare you.
So the next thing we do on the show, you guys, is a fist pump moment. And this is just something that if anybody's watching along with us and you guys want to get in on the action, this is like sort of that moment you're watching the movie and maybe you're by yourself, maybe you had a glass of scotch or something. Something happens.
Or
you look around and you're like, is anyone else seeing this right now? This is so awesome. I get to watch the rest of this movie. I'm so excited. And it could be anything. It could be a touching moment. It could be the score. It could be an explosion. It could be a one-liner. It could be a headshot. Anything.
Listen, I know, like I said, I'm going to go like a slightly different way of fist moment.
Yeah.
The huge car crash, when we were all talking during the trailer, when you think it's going to explode, I was like, ah!
Is it like down for you?
Yeah. Like, I wanted the full fist bump. That is, That's my fist pump / non-fist pump moment.
Fist pump moment for me was when the police corner the two bad guys in the end.
Yeah.
And you think it's just going to be lame and they're going to get arrested.
Right.
And after they let 100 cops show up, they go, fuck it, we're going out in a blaze of glory. Okay, and then it's the craziest amount of squibs I've ever seen.
It's like Denzel at the end of Training Day.
It's insane. Oh, yeah. It's just like, blood's flying on here. There's a piece of the cab flying off. I rewound it and laughed hysterically. My neighbors probably thought I was insane.
Yeah.
I just moved there.
You
they
sound
think
kind
I'm
of
sick
insane.
Of. I was just like,
you're talking about it.
Well, because
the
they're like
bump,
outside watching,
bump.
You just watch these people die. You're just like, well, you know what? It's also because movies nowadays have CGI blood all over the place. And it was crazy to see that much over-excessive practical use of squibs again. again, which the 90s specifically and 80s were good about, but the 2000s didn't really
We've
do
gotten, yeah. because those squibs are hurting people.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of things can go wrong with squibs.
I'm going to jump in with my parents. Because this is the reason this movie is so special to me is because
it was me and my dad's favorite.
I saw it in theaters in 09 as a thing I would do with
you
my buddy every week.
You went to the theaters to watch this movie.
Well, because we would do this thing every week where we were like, we're going to see the worst movie with the highest expectation for entertainment.
Right, yeah.
We did this for a whole year. And this was one of the ones we saw because of Travolta. You just
and then
have
you just
to
broke
see
up.
It. Yeah. My old buddy from Seattle. So when I watched this movie again like a year or two ago, I was sort of struck by the scene where he admits to taking the bribe because I was sort of having this moment like, this is such
it's the best scene of the movie.
It's such a great scene in like a really heavy-handed kind of cheesy way, but in an awesome way. And I sort of, I had that moment watching the movie by myself where I was like, and I called my buddy who I'd seen it with. I was like, do you remember this movie? It's so good. And so then when we did the show and we were talking about Fist Bump moment, I was like, that's kind of the ultimate one for me because it's such a cheeseball emotional moment. It has nothing to do with a headshot. There's no explosions. It's not a great speech. Yeah. It's just something about it. And that's totally my Fist Bump moment.
Denzel is great at that stuff, though.
I took a bribe. You know?
Yeah,
it's like, so I used the money.
Yeah, even something like John Q, I'll never forget when he's like, it's not goodbye, it's see you later. And that's such a terrible line, but I remember in the theater like, oh, he will see you later.
Here's the thing.
Denzel said it.
The last few Denzel movies, he's played this role over and over again of like the broken anti-hero.
Yeah.
Man on Fire. Yeah. Taking Pelham 1-2-3.
You could argue the Equalizer-ish, you know.
Yeah,
Equalizer. Totally. Yeah, I was just going to say Equalizer. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, and then the great thing about that John Q part is that right after that happens, in fact, the line that Travolta gives at the end, you're my goddamn hero, doesn't the guy in that movie say it?
Yeah.
Yo, John, you my hero, man. That's how the movie ends, I'm for sure.
Another one of those lines that's like that is when he's like, well, that's love, right? He goes, no, it's marriage. Love's a different thing.
Yeah, it's just
like the way he says it. You're just like,
so good.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
I like
Denzel
that.
Can deliver anything.
Yes.
Even when he asks to take off his coat.
And
he's like,
pizza.
He's like, can I take off my jacket?
Coat, please?
Yeah.
Being accused of something and being guilty of something are two entirely different
very
things.
Very different things.
God, that's so good.
My fist pump moment is the very beginning when Travolta's just like standing by the train.
Yeah.
Suddenly he turns, he goes, open the door right now or I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah. Like,
do it.
Do it. Do it now or I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Was there a point in Travolta's career where he just started high-pitching everything, or was it from the beginning? I want to know.
I think it started with...
The villain of Face Off.
No, I think it started with Grease, when Sandy showed up, and he was like, Sandy!
Yeah,
like that's,
it's from the beginning. Then. Yeah, it's from the beginning.
Because one that always comes to mind is where he's talking about he's trying to buy the heroin in Pulp Fiction.
Probably
a fucking grease spot.
Yeah,
like, that's what he says. So like,
yeah. It's just him.
Yeah, that's the new. It's the new thing. Nobody's really gone into the amount of Travolta high pitches.
Like,
we do Stallone yells on Guilty Movie.
We gotta get a montage of Travolta
high pitches.
Falsetto.
We just need to like every so like, we need to have a new segment on the show. Like, what about this movie is fucking awesome?
Yeah, right.
How would you want to high pitches
moment
do you give this
now?
Movie?
Yeah.
No, it's funny what you were saying about the kind of character he was playing, and we actually pulled this when we were reviewing Man on Fire, but Betsy Sharkey of the LA Times wrote that Denzel Washington, who starred in Crimson Tide, Man on Fire, Deja Vu, Taking, and Unstoppable, was Scott's muse. And Scott was at his best when Denzel Washington was in the picture. The characters the actor played are the archetype of the kind of men Scott made at their core, and what guided all the actions that followed was a fundamental decency. They were flawed men, to be sure, some more than others, but men who accorded dignity to anyone who deserved it. And that's like...
It's literally all these characters.
They're all the same character. Yeah. My sister used to, when you know, when I was younger, and she would describe sort of like the Denzel character. She called him the Noble Savage.
Huh.
It's kind of like that. Yeah. That's like the ultimate Denzel character. And like these... Tony Scott used his... I think that Tony Scott uses the cliched Denzelisms sort of better than any director. Like, he just...
Yeah.
They're all characters are the same, but they're all sort of awesome in that way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This is like a relatable, like, lovable quality. Like, people can relate. Like, I could do that. I could be an alcoholic and save this plane, you know?
Right.
And then they give him the whole, you know, I did take the bribe, but I was going to choose them anyway.
Right,
so
yeah.
That,
he's still
that
a
way,
good guy.
Yeah, the audience. And then it's for his kid's tuition, and
I
you're like...
I used the money to put my daughter to pay for the tuition. I have a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old daughter. I used the money. It's like, you're just like, oh, Denzel.
You're such a good guy.
Yeah. And the pause and...
His reaction when he shoots Travolta in the end, too, is heartbreaking.
Oh, it's yeah.
Like, he's like... And then the freeze frame of him smiling while he's walking in his gate is a terrible way to end.
With his milk. With the half gallon.
Like, I got the milk, like, and you hear a dog bark.
Because he can't get a gallon.
You hear a dog bark, and it's like, mer. And I just imagine, like, a text to come up and be like, Walter blah, blah, blah. He ended up giving the milk to his wife that night. And it's like, it just was such a weird way to end such a high-voltage movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
What only would have made it better is if they freeze frame and it was like, the taking a pillow, one, two, three. And they just had a sick ass theme song.
You get that explosion in there.
Thinking like Europe to do the theme song or something.
Chicken that was my favorite thing about 80s and 90s action movies, how all of them had a theme song with the title.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is the quality that's been missed.
Monster Squad?
Yeah, Monster Squad.
Had its own song.
Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, I'm going to kill you. Never bring up that movie again.
So let's jump into where these guys were sort of in their careers, because it's actually sort of an interesting point. If you think about Travolta and Denzel as similar in age and had similar like sort of career arcs where they really were peaking in like huge movies in the 90s. I mean, Travolta obviously had the earlier success, but then he was reborn in Pulp Fiction, and then he had all those movies he did in the 90s.
Phenomenon.
And Michael.
Michael, yeah.
Primal Colors?
Primary colors.
I like primal colors, though, better.
Yeah,
primal colors.
Primal colors.
It's basic colors for dinosaurs.
It's the color purple mixed with primal fear.
He was in that movie Prime Numbers, wasn't he?
Yeah. 1, 3, 7. Yeah. That's how the song went.
So Denzel, prior to this movie, right, his three previous credits, The Great Debaters 07, American Gangster 07, Deja Vu 06.
Which one was Deja Vu?
That's the other Tony Scott one that looks and feels identical to this movie.
I've never seen it.
It's even got the same colors.
Oh, yeah. That one. Yes.
Yeah. I never saw it.
It's actually not that bad.
It's not terrible.
American Gangster was solid.
I liked American Gangster.
American Gangster was decent. American. Yeah.
You don't?
I didn't love it. I liked it.
Not a fan.
He's so good in that movie. That's one of his best performances.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, that movie is just like, it's trying too hard to show me a story I've seen like 100 times. Like, we've seen the like criminal rise, to, you know, like the rise and fall story. I've seen it so many times.
It was really popular then.
Russell Crowe's really lazy in that movie.
Public Enemies. Denzel in that is so solid.
He's good. I mean, Denzel's good in like everything.
He burns that chinchilla coat.
Yeah, he's better in this movie than he is in that. Just saying.
Margarita don't know about that one.
Man,
didn't see
you
fucking kidding me.
Yeah. Bateman is going to, on Bateman's gravestone, there's just going to be taking a pillow.
Yeah, right. Nothing else. Nothing else. Not even when he was born or anything.
You
he was a good father, a good brother,
don't.
And he loved taking a pillow 1, 2, 3.
So, now leave me some fucking flowers.
Yeah.
So it never gets old.
So Deja Vu is good, by the way. Anybody who hasn't watched Deja Vu, Deja Vu is actually
serviceable.
It's way more of an action movie than this.
Absolutely.
Like Deja Vu is, if we were going to choose one of them other than Man on Fire of the five they did, actually Crimson Tide fits too. But
Crimson Tide,
yeah, it's a good one.
We love Crimson Tide. I never saw Great Debaters, American Gangster. I mean, it's not bad.
What was the Great Debaters? Was that like Dangerous Minds? Oh
He was a speech coach.
Yeah,
something
debate
like that.
Coach.
And then
sounds awesome.
Because like right before this, like right before, like, you know, Man on Fire was 03 and Manchurian Candidate, I want to say, was like 05.
I never saw that one.
That's a good one.
There was just that stretch of Denzel where he was very much, he was out of time. It's right around that same time.
The Siege. When was The Siege? That was so like mid-90s, right?
I love The Siege.
That's 98, I think.
But that's sort of like the Liam Neeson arc, right?
Yeah.
So like Denzel was doing a lot of those dramas and like trying to get his Academy Award.
Yeah.
And then he got into the action drama and everybody's like, oh shit, he's good with a gun. He looks amazing.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Dakota Fanning kind of made his career and it like in those movies, in the Tony Scott movies, I was like, oh, we can just do Man on Fire 5 more times? Let's make money.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And then, you know, Deja Vu and this was sort of the same way. And then Unstoppable. Is Unstoppable or Unstoppable? Right? Is the train one?
Yeah, it's like this movie and Unstoppable. Like,
Nonstop is the Liam Neeson one.
Okay.
I think about this and Unstoppable so often that, like, I tweeted earlier this week, like, Unstoppable and Taking Pillow 1, 2, 3 are, like, identical twins separated at birth, both, like, not sure what they're missing, but some vital element that doesn't make them actually good.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're the same movie. I couldn't remember if Rosario Dawson was in this or the other one. I was, like, pretty sure she was in this one.
Yeah.
Is she in Deja Vu? No, it's a different chick.
No, it's a different chick.
She's. Rosario Dawson's is in the Danny Boyle one that's just like Deja Vu, sort of.
Trance.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
And that's just like Paula Patton that's in.
Yeah, Paula Patton was a fan of her.
See, I like Unstoppable.
Very attractive young lady.
Yeah. I like Unstoppable because it takes place in Pennsylvania, so it's got like a little special place in my heart.
I can't get into that movie.
I enjoyed it, but I never need to see it ever again.
I love Unstoppable.
I can't have an action movie without a bad guy.
I'm with you on that.
I just can't. The bad guy's a train, really?
What's Chris Pine's line when he's like, well, I didn't realize I was going to start working in a nursing home, Denzel. Okay, all right.
All right.
Okay. All right, then. So let's talk Travolta. So
yeah,
Travolta,
he was doing some great things right then.
Oh, yeah. And this is interesting.
Wild Hogs.
And we mentioned it in here. So he lost. Yeah. He actually lost his son a few years before this, I want
to
say.
It was actually very close to when he was filming this. He was
still
grieving.
His son died or just was disappointed in his dad's tomb?
Oh, no, Josh. No. Too soon.
Sorry, John. I didn't know he was going to say it on the show. I'll be honest.
I apologize.
The people on Action Movie Anatomy do not support or endorse Josh. Yeah. Josh McCougar.
Could you bleep that out, Jonathan? Could we edit that? Do we have a 20-second delay on this show?
Well, it's the Pixar movie, right?
Yeah, so
the
dog.
They use a voice.
And then Hairspray, which was a huge success, and I think he's dressed up as a woman, right?
Yeah,
woman.
And then Wild Hogs, which is
a huge success.
Real gem. Martin Lawrence is in that movie with him.
Martin Lawrence,
say.
William H. Macy, and Tim Allen.
And they all, like, drive motorcycles?
Correct.
Let me just say.
They have a midlife crisis, and they're all motorcycle.
For the record. You've seen this movie.
You like this movie, don't you?
Wow.
The best part is
In Josh's defense, every parent of every friend of mine loves that movie.
Of course they do.
My in-laws love it. My parents love it. I've bought it for several Christmas gifts for anyone over the age of 50.
You've bought Wild Hogs more than once.
I've used for, like, buy one, get one free.
I think, Ben, this is your heart out, right? Is this when you have to leave? Is this after you said you bought Wild Hogs?
For other people, not for myself. For Christmas gifts for my parents. They think it's hilarious. He is terrible in Wild Hogs.
I'm sure he is.
Travolta's
No more talking about Wild Hogs.
Yeah, we're done.
Ben's.
We're back to my favorite movie, The Taking of Hell of a
Movie. McCougar's Grave, Wild Hogs. Wild Hogs is fucking awesome.
Bagley's like, it was never for me.
I bought it for my fucking grandmother.
It was my fucking parents. I think it's interesting, like, both of these guys were sort of, like, transitioning from legitimate, like, A-list, if I'm in a movie, it's a big deal, to, like, I think we all saw Travolta when this movie came out in the trailer, and we're like, what the hell is going on?
It was this, and then he did the From Paris with Love, and you were just like,
and he looked exactly the same.
Yeah. Oh,
the skull cap and the
terrible.
So bad. Really weird. He's got a rocket launcher.
And neither of them, like, has entirely, I guess Denzel's recovered more.
Yeah.
Flight.
He's Denzel.
And yeah.
He's actually a good actor.
Yeah.
Travolta's not actually a very good
actor.
Well, he has his moments.
Are you Travolta? He's amazing.
Well, Travolta went and did that, like, fucking haircut that was just like a pen.
Yeah.
Like, just shave it, Travolta. It's gone. It's fine. It's
like, whoever designed the bad guy in this movie was the worst ever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't buy that he's a stock market guy when he has all these tattoos.
Yeah, like, who goes to jail for, like, stock fraud or whatever and then gets a tattoo on their neck?
But can we all agree, though, that
Eric,
like,
Anthony that I went to high school with?
Can we all agree that, so Denzel's really good in this. We all agree,
of course,
that, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And the fact that Travolta's so over the top in this movie is almost what makes it sort of enjoyably bad. It's like, if he was better in this movie, the movie might just be dramatic and, like, less memorable.
Right.
But it's sort of more memorable because it's such a ridiculous movie.
And he totally grows on you by the end of it.
By the end of it, you're
like
in
his mustache.
Well, and you know what? Something we were talking about when we were watching it, that is, I think they made an interesting character choice, is that he's trying to be really cool and really hard the whole time, but he's kind of a dork. And it's like, you get the sense that all his henchmen all feel that way too. He's not actually cool.
Yeah, because he was a financial guy. He like came out of business school and he's like, I'm going to make my millions in the finance business.
Yeah. And he alludes to the fact that he had lots.
That is Travolta.
We've established that McCougar's terrible at impression.
Every time I try to do, like, a nerd thing, I go to, like, a Kermit the Frog and it just, like, goes that
it's what he thinks of me. Anytime stupid. He's like, hey, I'm Ben Begley.
Look at me, I'm Ben Begley. I did a Hallmark movie.
Can you give me a Russell Crowe?
Yeah, I was going to do that. I was going to say, you got to do the gladiator speech.
I'm Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies in the north.
I don't know it as well as you, but, like, I'll rub some dirt in my hands and kill a guy with a little sword.
And when I find my kid and wife, I'll snot a lot when I cry.
I'll never forget that. Tangent, guys.
That's
tangent. So we got a lot of shows still to
do.
We do got a lot to do.
So
I forget, they have structure to their show.
Yes.
I don't think we'll focus too much on it, but we should talk a little bit of production development. So,
very, very little.
This is based on originally a novel that was written by John Godey back in, like, 58, maybe?
It's pronounced Godet.
And he went by... it was
Jean Godet.
Morton Freegood was his real name. Freegood. And he was like a crime novelist that wrote a bunch of books in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Weirdly enough, if you put all these numbers or all these letters and rearrange them, it comes out with Morgan Freeman.
It does.
I'm not going to fall victim to trying to figure that this is rough because it's not right. It's definitely not true. So this was made originally in 74, the adaptation, right? Which is like a classic. Tarantino referenced this as like one of his big inspirations.
The original is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's a much better movie than this.
I don't know about that.
It's a different type of movie.
Yeah,
I've
never seen it.
I think most people feel that the original is much better. Mr. Blue is a character in the original, so that's like Reservoir Dogs. He pulled that. Yeah. And there's like there's a bunch of bits and pieces that that people reference with the original movie. Then it was remade again in 98 as a TV movie, and then finally made again now. And actually the ransom had changed each time because of inflation. It was $1 million in 74, $5 million in 98, and then $10 million by the time this one was made.
And 1 cent.
And 1 cent.
Yeah.
Because keep that. That's your broker fee.
Because he's a finance guy.
Yeah.
That's right. For you.
I could watch this movie every day. I could watch it.
What?
I'm going to watch it again.
What's wrong with you? You have serious issues.
Every day?
Are you going to call your buddy every time you watch
right
it too?
Now, yeah.
Remember when we were kids? Everyone in Seattle.
Hey, Jake, I just miss you. I keep watching this movie so I can talk to you.
I can watch Face Off every day, but I couldn't watch
I love Face Off.
Every day.
So Brian Helgeland wrote this movie.
He's a badass.
Helgeland's like a total badass. He's he's getting in the limelight again now because Legend, that new Tom Hardy movie that's coming out, he wrote and directed that. Where it's like twins and some sort of gangster thing. He also wrote L.A. Confidential, Mystic River. And then it's even funnier if you go back to the beginning of his career when he got involved with Black. What's his name? The producer. Todd Black?
No, yeah, Todd Black. Todd Blackisms.
Todd Blackisms.
Yeah, he... Shane Blackisms?
Shane Blackisms is what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Todd Black worked actually on A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. Which
that movie.
Very underrated movie.
It's actually a very good movie.
Like that movie.
Helgeland wrote and directed it. A Knight's
Tale.
Really
liked it.
Yeah, way back in the day. So he sort of has now come back around. But he's been writing for years. He wrote Man on Fire.
So the guy that wrote Man on Fire and Mystic River wrote this movie.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
Man, you are crushing Bateman's dreams with this. He loves this movie.
We did agree, though, that like it's funny because the color and the tone of this movie is like so specific, right? It feels like a stylized Michael Bay movie. That's like the difference.
Sure.
Tony Scott and Michael Bay, they're very similar in that way. Everything's incredibly well lit, but this movie just has more style.
Can you believe if they co-directed a movie, the amount of ADD-isms that would be going on?
I wish it would have happened before we lost Tony Scott.
I already had a seizure halfway through. It'd just be like...
Yeah.
But what's interesting about it is, like, the script here is more intelligent than the movie appears to be. Like,
absolutely.
That's what we were talking about, that one line when he says,
well, there's
that's
a lot
marriage.
Of really good lines, that, like, really well-written lines and just situations
just
in this movie that are...
Travolta?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or you could imagine if you were reading the script before, it was like you get to a line like that, and, like, the writer would be like, oh, that's a really good line. I like that. And it's just funny, you sort of lose some of that personality because the movie is so sort of homogenized Hollywood, like the big $100 million action.
I go back to that frame rate stuff, it drives me nuts. I thought it was just going to be the opening credits, and then it's, I don't know what that is, it's this blurry half slow motion, half out of focus, half they had one broken camera the entire film, that's what it looks like, and they're like, because especially when the train's going to go off the rails and then they slow it down, it just, to me, it cuts out the intensity of it. When it's like, it looks like the DP was on Quaaludes during those moments. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, Tony Scott's just
so weird.
You sort of wonder, like, you know, obviously Tony Scott, the late Tony Scott now, if he was still around, like, what his movies would look like now. Because he was going so far in this direction. All his late movies looked and felt the same. I sort of wonder, like, he was working on a Warriors remake. They were talking about
Top Gun remake.
Top Gun 2 he's going to direct. So I sort of wonder what, like, his later stuff looked like. But anybody who's, like, unfamiliar with Tony Scott, we can kind of just cover that really quickly. He's the younger brother of Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. Got his start in the 80s, directed Top Gun, which is his highest grossing movie of all time. Beverly Hills Cop 2, True Romance.
True Romance is so
awesome. Yeah, it's a great movie.
True Romance is the one movie that he's directed that really feels nothing like a Tony Scott movie.
Exactly.
But it's because it's a Tarantino script. Yeah, so it's, like, sort of half Tarantino-ish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't really take a Tarantino script and turn it into a Tony Scott movie.
No.
Very difficult.
Yeah. And a lot of those actors, he's worked with a lot of the same guys over the years. Gandolfini, obviously, was in that movie. Yeah. Gandolfini's also in Crimson Tide.
Mm-hmm.
I love Gandolfini. Miss the guy. Yeah. Tony Scott, you know, got his start as, I want to say that he got his start working in commercials with his brother. Is that right?
Yeah.
That. And then, we read that whole thing about the way he used Denzel. That was very much sort of the man he appeared to be. And then I jumped off a bridge a few years ago.
Yeah.
As much as I'm, you know, making fun of the frame rate, I actually really enjoyed almost every Tony Scott movie I've ever
absolutely
seen.
They're
great movies.
He was really good at cranking up tension, and his movies have a pace to them that I really enjoy. I just didn't like some of the weird visual choices. It was like a cross between almost like a Michael Bay and an Oliver Stone when Oliver Stone started just throwing in like Any Given Sunday when it's like random cutaways.
Yeah,
and
that was
like, what the
weird
fuck
one
is happening here?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I respect him as a filmmaker, just so people on the message boards don't, you know, go nuts on me.
Well, that's, I mean, I was going to say that the one thing that I think from, we've done, this is episode 26 of the show now, that he's the director that I've learned to appreciate more than any other on this show.
Absolutely.
And it's because I think I had this sense of all those five Denzel movies that he did, as they were all these sort of like, eh, those movies kind of suck. They're not very good. And then each one when I watched again,
Man on
like,
Fire was the one. Like, yeah. You go and watch that again, you're like, holy shit. Yeah. This is a great movie.
You're just
the
really
bomb in the butt?
Engaged.
Come on, that's
very good. These movies are so extremely badass. Engaging. And, and in the same way we've talked before about how, like, a Tom Cruise movie has this sort of, like, glossy feel. Everything about it feels like it's put together. There's no holes, mm-hmm. at least visually. His movies have that same feel, where it's all well lit. The color is mm-hmm. extremely consistent.
I think there's something to be said about Tony Scott simply because he did take risks.
Yeah.
And he didn't just make it, and he made it his own.
Yeah.
And maybe it did a little bit distract from some things, and people didn't per se like some things. But as a director, his style drives a movie, and mm-hmm. and movies a lot like you were talking about that really helps the movie.
Yeah.
In a movie that may normally not be as well because Tony Scott's directing style really did it and didn't do it a disservice. It really just it moved it along really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, if this movie was filmed shot and like the tone wasn't right, it would have been a very, very bad movie.
Yeah.
And like you were saying with his pacing, he has a great pacing in all of his movies.
Lightning speed.
Yeah, it's very quick, but you're able to digest everything.
Here's the difference between Michael Bay and Tony Scott. I'm never bored during a Tony Scott movie. I can get bored very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Transformers, it's like a 30 minutes for them to get across the desert in the second movie, and I remember just being like, there's still
like,
explosions.
The robots,
yeah. 2, 3, 4 are just bad movies. But and the other thing that's really interesting is what you think about, like, the iconic actors of our time and each of the most important ones, and maybe before us, like the way that Scorsese used De Niro. It's like they're memorable. Like, these actors are memorable because of the work that certain directors get out of them on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
And even though these movies that he did with Tony Scott aren't considered classics by any means, Man on Fire is kind of a cult classic.
Yeah.
Crimson Tide's kind of like an action classic. These
I
are
don't
the
know
three...
if you would call Man on Fire a cult classic. I mean, that's a classic movie.
People like that movie, but it's not like a great movie by people's standard. It would be a top.
I think
50,
when people
like,
we've talked about this, when people watch that movie,
they love it.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. So I think the fact that he established like the sense movie. We have of Denzel, it's like we all have this consistent sense of his ability because he's good in every one of those movies.
I just looked at his IMDb and I'm like, yep, good. There's not a single movie I've ever seen him in. Even the Book of Eli, I thought he was badass.
Right,
yeah,
totally.
Like, there's like nothing I've seen him in where he's remotely bad or not amazing to watch.
I used to do a sports show for Black Hollywood Live here at same studio, and we would ask every athlete we interviewed, we'd like a speed round at the end, and every time it would be in the story of your life, who would play you?
Denzel.
And 9 out of 10 times was Denzel Washington.
Denzel.
Almost
Denzel.
Every single
right.
one of them. You know?
Of course.
Yeah. It's like T.O. said it, like everyone. It's just like the same answer. Everybody's just like, well, Denzel Washington. He's the best.
Yeah, who else would it be?
It's gonna be a movie about me. I want Denzel Washington.
Jamie Foxx?
Yeah, I think we heard that from one person.
That's too bad.
Malcolm Jamal Warner.
We won't really talk much about the producers here, but it's a production company called Escape Artists. It was originally two different companies, Todd Black, Steve Tisch, Jason Blumenthal. They're the main guys, as well as Tony Scott was a producer on this. There's 12 credited producers. Interestingly enough, usually when you have that many and you go and you start to look, there's like half of them that have a bunch of credits that are all related, and then the other half that have like worked production assistance on one or two things.
Right.
Every one of the 12 guys that's listed has a pretty good, like a pretty solid resume. Like, I didn't find a single person where I was like, well, I can just write this guy off. But when you go and you look at like the production company, it's these three guys that own Escape Artists. And so
when I lived in New York, I worked at an Italian restaurant, and Denzel and Steve Tisch came in every Thursday for lunch.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Interesting.
Is he a cool
every
guy?
Thursday. Oh, the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like you would be.
Yeah, yeah. Todd Black originally worked with Denzel on Antoine Fisher, which was obviously Denzel Washington starred in that and directed it. It was his directorial debut.
I like that movie.
It was a good movie.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I haven't seen it in a while.
Pursuit of Happiness, Southpaw, and then Blumenthal also worked on like Forrest Gump, American History X. So
you're glossing over Dunstan Checks In.
Or Tish. I'm sorry, Tish worked on those movies. But yeah, Dunstan Checks In.
Dunstan Checks
In.
That's really strange to go from Dunstan Checks In to American History. Oh no, I'm sorry. Tish did American History X.
I thought
that was two very tonally different films.
Dunstan Checks In. Dunstan Checks In is the one with the monkey. Is that right?
Yeah, and Jason Alexander.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that movie.
Classic.
And American. Just want to comment here real quick. No, not all athletes are black. Ben was on Black Hollywood Live, where they had black athletes on the show.
Did someone actually ask?
Someone was very upset. Or they seemed pretty upset. Like, all athletes are black? No.
It was a network called Black Hollywood
Black
Live.
Black Hollywood Live,
which
and
I worked
every
on.
Athlete that you had it. On the show, Black Hollywood Live, was a black man.
Was a
man.
Black guy.
Not actually true. We actually have had...
a black athlete.
Half of the people I think we had on the show. Anyway, we're not trying to. Anyway, let's
people
move on
love
to
it. To get angry.
Yes, yes. They do. Critically, this movie is very interesting.
Yeah, consistently across the board on RottenTomatoes.com, 51, 52, and 51%, which is rare. Like, Man on Fire was one of the strange ones where the critics gave it like a 37%,
right.
And the audience fans had like 85% or something.
I really, like, I know we've been talking about Man on Fire a lot this episode, but I just don't understand how you do that. How do you give that movie a 30%?
Yeah, it doesn't make any
critics,
sense.
Critics... our assholes.
And you give this a 50? You give this movie a 50%?
Maybe look at some of the movies that get like 93% where you watch and you're like,
yeah. Kill me. Kill me now.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
I don't want to mention anything.
That's the thing is like, on Rotten Tomatoes, and Gray is a very good friend of mine, so is Matt. And all of the critics that go and do it, even schmoes and stuff, a lot of times fans see movies way differently than critics do. Mm-hmm. And by all means, critics, go ahead and do your thing, Leonard Maltin. I don't care.
Right.
I'm going to love Man on Fire. I'm going to love these movies and I will defend them.
Right.
I don't care about a score, but in these kind of situations, it is fun to talk about because it's like, F you.
By the way, my friends that are critics are not assholes. I mean,
there's a difference.
Love you, James.
No, there is a difference between people like schmoes and Gray and people like that who have... I feel like the problem I have with a lot of critics is when you can't go to into a movie and accept it for what it's supposed to be.
Oh, that's
putting it up to standards. Like, you can't do Steve Jobs and, you know, The Last Witch Hunter, which I'm sure is not going to be good. But, you know, like, terrible example. But you know what I mean? It's like, so that's where I think critics have started to kind of come around to that when, like, Furious 7 gets, like, an 80%. People are starting to accept things for what it is. But that's why I think schmoes and critics like that when they go in with, like, kind of like an everyman's perspective. Yeah. On movies instead of this uppity, like,
well, it doesn't
critic
follow
journalism.
This thing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the other thing is, like, with these movies, we always pick two reviews. Usually, we always do a fresh and a rotten review, and almost every single time with the rotten ones, it feels like the critic just completely missed the point of the movie.
That's what frustrates me. Yeah. That's when I feel like they're just being jerks.
Yeah.
100%. So, the movie cost $100 million to make, which is a little surprising, to be honest. I guess a lot of the money is probably spent.
Considering what Looper cost, cost 40? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
This movie costs $60 million.
Here's where it's going to make...
Travolta and Denzel's
salaries. Shut down the Manhattan Bridge.
Yeah.
Everything in New York is twice as expensive as in any other city. True. You don't get the tax breaks back. You're shooting on subways. You're shooting on subway tracks. You have to close all those things down. You have to close down Manhattan Bridge. You have to do huge things in order to make this movie work. That's where all the money went.
Yeah, and I guess probably just the unnecessary action sequences.
Like the cars exploding or not exploding. Yeah.
And the big gun battle thing you mentioned at the end. Just a bunch of unnecessary
moments. On Madison Avenue.
So this movie's a flop, pretty much. I mean, it only made $65 domestically, and it cost $100 million to make. I mean, worldwide, it ended up bringing in $150, so they made... $1.5 million, but that's still pretty bad.
That's not very
all things considered.
I mean, considering Denzel.
Yeah, you hear Denzel, Tony Scott, and John Travolta, you think it's going to make some money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe Unstoppable made a little more money, but not by a whole lot.
No.
It's actually funny here. We have, you know, it opened $23 million behind The Hangover and Up, and neither of those was opening. They were both still in theaters from previous weeks.
Wow.
So this movie just didn't do well.
That's tough competition.
I might be overstepping my bounds here, but I feel like a lot of the reason that people didn't go to see the movie is because they saw the whole movie in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very bad trailer.
And also the fact that Travolta is, like, ridiculous looking. Like, the only reason we saw it was because we were like, this movie looks ridiculous, so let's go have a laugh. I mean, either sides of it, we saw, like, 88 Minutes and Righteous Kill.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, that's the kind of movie we were seeing in theaters. Bad movies.
Righteous Kill was abysmal.
It's a good drop.
Yeah.
Good name drop.
Those are bad movies. So we pulled a graphic here of Tony Scott's adjusted for ticket price inflation, because he's obviously directed movies for a long time. His top 11, because Taking Pelham is the 11th highest grossing.
Right, you get it.
Good insertion. That's a Ben Batemanism right there.
Yeah, right there. So we had every one of the movies he did with Denzel is on this list.
Yep.
And you can see in order almost that they just made less and less money. Crimson Tide made a huge amount of money back in 95.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Man on Fire, second most, Unstoppable, Deja Vu, and Pelham are the last three, which...
It makes sense.
Unstoppable just made a little bit more money, but that's also because it
Chris
was...
Chris Pine.
and it was Star Trek.
And it was, yep, exactly.
So that it had just come out. So they got, but not by much. I mean, they still only made $84 million, and I'm sure that movie cost quite a bit of money to make.
Yeah.
You know, it had a train.
So a moving train the entire time.
Yeah. Andrew's whole theory is that you can't have a good action movie without a good action movie villain, so when the villain's a train, it doesn't work.
I hate that movie.
Unstoppable is speed on a train without Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, right.
And without people on the train.
Yeah, and without a Sandra Bullock, and without hostages.
If you had just put...
So it's not speed.
If you had just put Travolta...
Just put one guy on the train.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna kill myself and everybody else.
Stop this fucking train. Open the door to it right now or I'll fucking kill you.
Right, our audience is just like, what is wrong with these guys?
So we should keep moving through here because we have pulled a couple of reviews, you know, like we mentioned. We usually pull a fresh and a rotten. So the fresh one we pulled is Andrea Chase from Killer Movie Reviews, and she says when logic subsides, as alas it does, is the sheer force of Washington's intensity and Travolta's Elan, what is that? That keeps the film on.
That's my French name.
Track. Je ne sais quoi.
And it's funny because she's essentially suggesting that, like, the relationship between these two people and their intensity and the entertainment value is the only thing that makes this movie good.
I love that that's not even really a great review.
No, which is why I pulled it, because it's, like, sort of acknowledging, like, this movie's not great,
but it's a very backhanded compliment, like, meh.
It's kind of like what we're all saying, though, which is, and obviously I'm a little more passionate
she's
about this movie, but...
Just a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how Run All Night was. It's like, yeah, they were cool, but the movie... You know,
and then the rotten one you got here, a professionally mounted genre exercise which tries to please both thriller and social drama crowds and suffers mightily as a result.
Yeah, one of the other ones that I read was like, you can't make the original Taking of Pelham better by adding like more terrible cursing and cranking up the volume.
Yes.
And adding like a Jay-Z song and like make it like really New York. Like that's like with the whole like,
I'm John Turturro. Yeah. This is how I talk all the time.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Like, he just like really wanted. I can picture like Tony Scott being like, I want a remake Taking a Pelham 1-2-3. I want it to be really intense and gritty and in New York. $100 million.
Let's do this thing. Give me this money, or I'll fucking kill you.
You a Yankees fan?
Yeah, that's one of the best lines of the whole movie.
No, I mean yes.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, I don't think there really isn't like, yeah, is your heart out?
I gotta go.
You gotta go. It's cool.
Right now-ish.
We're getting into
Damn it, I had my favorite line, too.
Do it. Let's do it.
Share? Just drop it real quick.
Have we already said it like 17 times? Okay.
No. Here, wait. I wrote it down because it was so ridiculous.
Please tell me it's the he makes it work line.
No, my favorite line is when John Travolta says, lick my bunghole, motherfucker!
Oh, yeah. Lick my bunghole.
I couldn't believe he said, lick my bunghole, motherfucker! And then he says, another line I like, sorry, I had two, was... Man, he's got a sexy voice. He'd be my bitch in prison. I'm like,
you really?
Like, wait a minute.
The Wall
Street
guy? I
think you would be Denzel's bitch in prison.
Absolutely. Denzel was like, I don't know if he actually gained weight or if they just put him in a giant shirt to make him
Denzel
look
overall. Yeah,
I
think he's a huge
more Waltery. Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Come on, lick my bunghole, motherfucker. Sounded like a Beavis and Butthead outtake.
Absolutely. We talked about that on your show today.
Yeah. It's like,
bunghole?
Yeah.
What?
How about he said, you know he said it? And everybody's like, I don't think you're supposed to say bunghole. And he's like, we're keeping bunghole.
We're keeping
like, all right, Travolta, we'll keep bunghole.
Motherfucker, see this mustache?
I'm walking off the set.
Yeah. I will walk if you don't keep bunghole.
Like, no, it wasn't even in the script. He, like, ad-libbed the line. And then he's like, I fucking love it.
It seems like most of his dialogue is ad-libbed. Just like, motherfucker, he bookends, like we said,
every single line he says at the end of it.
I think you could have used fuck less. Well, today was a fucking asshole of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
These are motherfuckers.
Hey guys, on bunghole, I guess I gotta go.
Yeah.
Hey,
man, Ben
thanks
Begley.
For coming on.
Sorry, everybody, I have to run.
Begley.
I'm an a-hole.
Thank
I'm
you
a bunghole.
Better
writer.
Things to do.
Thank you guys, I'm gonna let you go so you can do things.
Yeah, take care.
Don't
man.
Worry, I'll promote your movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. We won't talk any smack about you, man. Don't worry.
Good. Thanks,
yeah. Bye, buddy.
Take care, bud.
So, favorite lines. Because we don't really have an ultimate action scene
there
to do.
There is no ultimate action scene.
I mean, the ultimate action
You're
scenes are
in front
all
of the camera.
Oh, shit. My bad.
We're very professional here at Popcorn Talk.
We got this. I'm gonna just scoot over.
Yeah.
So sorry, I was doing like a Denzel impersonation, you know, because he stutters intentionally on a bunch of his lines.
We can make it work.
Have you ever notice how he does that?
Yeah, he does it all the time. We don't really have an ultimate action scene, right? It's like
it's either the shootout or you redecorating?
This movie lends itself more to like a complete action movie.
Who cares? Just leave it.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna leave it now.
You should do
talking to
both
of them.
Mics like it's a press conference.
That for anybody on audio, we just tried to move a mic off the table. It didn't work.
For anyone on audio that's not listening anymore because we said motherfucker like 300 times.
Because kids we at home peaked your mom. Headphones yeah. repeatedly.
Just bleeding out of your ears.
So we usually do like the ultimate action scene. There really isn't one to speak of here. No. We will do favorite line though. And if you have a favorite line, you should tweet in or comment or let us know what your favorite line is because there's a lot of good ones.
There are really good ones.
They're mostly just John Travolta.
We can't say that one again.
No.
We can't say it again.
Bunghole motherfucker.
Just the motherfucker.
We just have to leave not it say it
no.
anymore.
I'm over it.
I'm going to jump in. So I would say...
You like that term, that phrase, jump in.
I'm going to
jump in here.
I'm going to jump in here. Sure. Yeah. Sure. I once got like heavily criticized by a fan on like a different show that was like, that Ben guy always is just like, sure. Just like waiting for his turn to talk. We like make fun of it so much now. I love...
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to go with my line.
I love the set, like when he gets on the phone with his wife.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of lines here that I like, but I really love when he's like, you tell her to run straight at the hurdles tomorrow. You tell her to run straight at the hurdles.
Damn you.
You know it's my favorite.
Like in Flight, when he's like, tell your son you love him.
Yeah.
In Flight, when you like yell in the black box.
I just love it. He's like, tell her to run straight at the hurdles. And she's like, well, you tell her yourself, because we need milk. So I need you to bring home a gallon. He's like, I can get a half gallon. It's like, just none
of
it
makes
any
sense.
Why
a gallon? I can get a half gallon.
And they show that in the trailer for some reason. He says the half gallon line in the trailer. It's really weird.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would
put that in the trailer. Whoever made that trailer should not be allowed to make trailers anymore.
I really enjoy that trailer myself.
It's the whole movie.
Michael Bay made the trailer.
That's why you like it.
Yeah, I hired Michael Bay. Yeah. What do you guys got, favorite lines?
Good.
Well, it was the same. Jerk. it's the same. That, and then also the phone call between him and Travolta, which is the whole movie. No, it's the when he admits to taking the bribe.
Yeah,
it's such a great line.
I also actually love when Travolta says, he's like, get up, you, the kid. He's like, we got, what's your name? Gio, he's got an 80s skateboard thing going on here. Yeah. He makes it work. That's like such a random line.
So for me, it's like one of those little one-off kind of things. Like, so who the hell did you fuck to get this job? Walter Garber says, myself was easier than it looked. And then the police captain Hale says, yeah, fucking yourself always is.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah,
great line.
Just one of those throwaways.
It's gritty, man.
Yeah.
So much cursing.
Oh.
There's a bunch of... just leave it, dude. There's a bunch of obscene, just over... Just too many. Just cussing too much.
There's a lot of cursing.
That is like it doesn't fit.
Watch Ben Bateman
try
and make this happen.
Why don't you just leave it, man?
He's killing me right now. He's got to take Pelham 1, 2, and 3.
Look at that, guys. Three mics.
Wow.
You did it.
After all that. All right, let's go into our hero and villain ranking.
Oh, I think we all know
that neither of them are on the list. There's no way that either
of
these guys...
If either of them made this list, I'd walk off the show.
I know. He's going to get him on the list.
I would consider putting Ryder on my villains list because he's such an entertaining and memorable villain for
me.
He's
the worst.
He's great.
He is nothing. There's nothing
intimidating
about him.
He is more memorable than the Train and Unstoppable.
I was just going to say the Train and Unstoppable is more intimidating than he is.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
The Train is more entertaining than John Travolta.
I mean, I'm just trying to see here. So I have Howard Payne at 50. I have Cyrus the Virus at 49. Oh, those are yours. Can we scroll down here so I can see the bottom now?
Yeah. Howard Payne. Who's that?
Oh, is
Major
that
Payne
that's,
from
that's
is
Speed?
That Damon Wayans.
There we go. Okay, so it looks like I have Cyrus the Virus as my last one. I didn't even... And Howard Payne is... I mean, yeah, I'm going to put Ryder at 50. Easy. Easy 50. He's top 50, guys.
You can walk off. I won't blame you.
I'm not going to take him in the top 50 because
no, dude, there's nothing
like
no.
John Travolta in Swordfish is more villainous than Ryder.
I disagree. He's way less memorable. Can you quote any of his lines?
No, I couldn't quote any of his lines before I got to this movie.
But I bet you could quote a lot of the lines now.
Now, yeah, watching 2 days ago.
All right. Moving on. We can get to where this movie actually ranks on our personal lists.
Yeah,
because we have the all time top.
Out of the shows that you've done?
Yeah, the 25 movies that we've already done, we've
26.
Started to rank them. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So Andrew and I have now done... So Andrew's ranking... let's see here.
What's at 25 for you?
Looks like...
The very lowest... Oh, it's Independence Day on both of ours, I'm pretty sure.
No, I'd take Independence Day over this anytime.
I actually think I might, too.
So it'd be 26.
Yeah, dude. This is the worst movie we've done on the show. It doesn't fit our criteria.
Taking
it's
a Pelham?
But I think it
are
works,
you out of your mind?
It works really well with Guilty Movie Pleasures.
It does. This is worse than Independence Day?
Exactly.
You're out of your mind.
Dude, this is way better. Independence Day is way better than this movie.
Independence Day is a terrible movie.
No, it's not.
It's a very bad movie.
It is a bad
Harry
movie.
Harry Connick Jr.
This is a worse movie.
This goes... Directly
this goes
between...
right next to the number one on Ben's.
I like this movie more than a lot of these movies, but I can definitely understand that I'm maybe being like a little bit just slightly
biased. I'm going to put it ahead of Con Air, maybe?
What?
Ahead of...
Right. I'm like sick John to my Wick. Stomach.
Even my sister thinks you're an idiot.
Ahead of John Wick?
Look at that. Bacon. You got two thumbs... You got three thumbs down for my family.
Six
I'm going to go... I'm an eight.
Eight.
Yeah, all right. I'll put it one spot behind Taken. That's where I'll put it.
So what do you have it in front of?
Looks like I've got it
Furious
in front of...
7, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Rambo First Blood Part 2, Independence Day, and Jurassic World.
I actually... Yeah, just throw it at him, dude.
I feel sick, and that's not because of how much I drank last... That's partially why I feel sick. The other part of why I feel sick is that is the worst ranking ever for a movie.
Jurassic World?
This movie's great. This movie's a classic.
I think, honestly, at this point, I think he's just doing to get a goat out of us. Like,
he's just trying to, like, that he knows I'm not because he knows how much I love this movie.
He loves this movie.
Unbelievable. All right, guys, I'm gonna move on from arguing.
We lost all of our viewers.
No one's viewers watching. Left. Somebody just broke their screen. Yeah. They're suing us. So we usually do recast, right? That's like one of the things
we
do here.
I like the recast
here.
Move. I threw away my recast thing.
We decided to leave Denzel off the recast list because we feel like it's been recent enough. You can't really recast Denzel in this movie.
You don't want to recast him in this movie.
He's the best part of the movie.
Yeah, you can't do it.
I mean, he's the best part of by far. So we chose John Travolta, John Turturro, James Gandolfini, and Luis Guzman as the four characters to recast if the movie was going to be just remade again for the fourth time.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like I have a couple good ones here.
I feel pretty good about mine.
Yeah. I thought of the only one that I thought of on the way here, and I can't remember, is who plays the mayor in my recast. So maybe it'll come to mind as we're talking.
I went with Brendan Gleeson.
For the mayor?
For the mayor.
That's pretty good. Bad.
Yeah, big fan of him. And I could just see him doing all of the things.
Rock solid.
Yeah.
I think... do you guys want to go in order around the table and start with Travolta?
Or
you
want to
go up the...
Well, we should have started with Guzman, but I hopped in just because I was
you
proud of
my Gleason.
You can go
with
your
mayor, and if I can remember mine while we're talking, I'll throw it in there.
Okay.
Who do you got?
Luis Guzman, I was going to take Michael Pena. I know we're staying in like the Latino kind of thing.
Right.
I love Michael Pena. He was great in what did I just see?
I know. I just Martian.
Yes, he was great in Martian.
Really love Martian.
Yeah, I need fantastic. To watch that movie.
Was great.
For my Guzman, I went with shout out to Autumn. I went with Michael Chiklis.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I went with Joe Pantoliano for that role.
Wow.
That's so funny because I actually used Joe. In my recast, but for someone else.
Joe Pantoliano is the chief in Bad Boys. Bad Boys 2 Bad Boys 2 is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I mean, Pantoliano's just great.
Oh, he's
that's
fantastic.
A great
goddamn you, Cypher! Goddamn you, Cypher!
And you're staying in the Sopranos family with Gandolfini and Joe Pants and
true,
all that kind of stuff.
So did you give your mayor yet?
No, I didn't get my mayor. And you guys are, I kind of stayed, I guess, with like in the same genre of kind of actor.
Yeah.
So like fat actor.
Totally.
Sure.
I went Gerard Depardieu as
Gerard Depardieu?
He doesn't play a lot of American actors ever, so it's like, Gerard Depardieu.
Make him the mayor.
Yeah. Because he kind of looks like, he kind of looks like a New York Upper East Side Jewish guy.
Right,
that,
right.
For mayor, kind of dirty, a little bit of a dirtier guy.
That's
fair. Yeah.
I love when in adaptation when Nick Cage is like thinking, he's like, who would play me in my movie? Maybe that dashing Gerard Depardieu. It's so good.
Cage is good.
It's a good Cage.
It's spot on.
What do you got?
I already did my mayor.
Okay, and I haven't come up with my... Well, I had like a bunch. I'm so mad because I felt like
you need to write these down.
I never write them down.
You never
it's
write them
a
down.
This has happened before. I may remember it at some point before the show's over. Who's John Turturro? What do you guys got?
Well, I mean, I'm going to stick in the Sopranos family. Michael Imperioli.
Oh, that's really
that's
good.
A good one.
We lose a James Gandolfini. You bring in another Sopranos
actor.
You bring Chrissy Pants.
Yeah.
And he's a good New Yorker. I think he would be really good in that role because he's like the everyday kind of guy.
He actually might be really good. That's a good one. Yeah, I think that's really solid.
I brought in someone that can actually bring something to a character, since Turturro just can't do it, even though he's a good actor.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
I went with Giancarlo Esposito.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Gus.
That's clever.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Gus Fring.
I like him.
He's not in a ton.
No, and he should be.
Yeah, they
very
kept him
actor.
In a lot of
very
TV,
good.
But he's a great actor. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Guy's fantastic. I went with Mark Ruffalo.
Oh,
I like Ruffalo.
Yeah,
I'll give you Ruffalo.
He's capable. You know, I don't know. I think I like him. I think he's good.
He can play. He can play like the every guy.
Yeah,
he can also put on a suit and be.
And he can be
guy.
Kind of a dick if you need him to be.
Absolutely,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Solid. Who do you guys got as
My two were tied for the writer.
Who?
I had Timothy Oliphant.
I thought about that. Yeah.
Do you think about Timothy Oliphant?
He's just not that good in Die Hard when he plays a villain. He's just okay.
Yeah. I think that movie just sucks, so it ruined Oliphant for me.
Yeah.
And John Cusack. I know Cusack rarely plays a villain, but I think he would be a good writer in this thing.
The thing that's
anyone could be a good writer.
Yeah.
The thing that's hilarious is when you think about Travolta in this role, it's so miscast and he's so weird and he's so over the top. You can essentially take any washed up 80s, 90s actor
and they'll be better.
Who's aging and put them in the same role and think about them being funny. Like, think about Nick Cage. It's hilarious. Like, the idea of.
I actually had him Cusack, written down for a minute. Hilarious. I was like, I can't do it.
I went a little more serious
with
mine.
I know you guys like Cage, so I saved him.
Oh.
For, like, if we were going to say, like...
You want him to play Denzel?
No, I would say Cage as Ryder.
That's Cage, what you're going for?
Oh, I mean, he's the clear choice.
Yeah?
Yeah, Cage. Actually, I had that written down, too. And then I love it.
I went serious. I went Jeremy Renner, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I just sort of liked the idea of him actually being a little more intimidating.
Okay.
As opposed to just, like...
He's great in The Town. He's intimidating in that.
Yeah. Renner's great. I think he'd be very good.
And that's where I use my Pantoliano.
Oh, okay, for Travolta.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Because he's not intimidating, just like Travolta is not intimidating. But you could see him be like a weasel. You could see him being like, I mean, Cypher, you know?
Totally.
And he could rock that neck tattoo.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet neck
tattoo. So Clooney with the neck tattoo and From Dusk Till Dawn meets Ryder from Taking Pelham 1-2-3 with the neck tattoo.
Clooney. Clooney's the other guy that I could think of that would be like, could play Denzel in this role.
Yeah.
Well, he's so good. They kind of have the exact same quality. They're kind of likable in all the same ways as actors.
Yeah.
They're great at being the smartest guy in the room. That's like their best quality.
Yeah, but Travolta comes off, I mean, excuse me, Clooney can come off as a douchebag.
A little bit.
Whereas I feel like Denzel comes off as a noble savage.
Yeah, Clooney as a villain just doesn't work.
No, I was saying as...
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm thinking like on the flip side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right, well, I can't remember my mayor, so that's a problem. But I guess I'm not gonna recast the mayor. God,
he's out.
Need to just
stick. Hey, we got an opening on my show, Action Movie Anatomy. If you want to come on, we can audition you.
Can you do a Tom Cruise impersonation?
No.
Oh, well, because I can't.
Because I can't, Josh.
I think we sort of already talked about Cage versus Cruise.
Yep.
The idea of Cruise playing the Travolta role is also hilarious.
That's great.
Yeah, just super.
Well, it's like if you took his role in Collateral
and
then kind of like cartoonized it,
that
would be Ryder.
Open door.
Do it.
The beginning one, yeah.
Do it with Cruise.
Do it with Cruise.
Look, open the door right now. You have to listen to me. Open the door. Do it now or I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah, see, it's way better than
it's
that.
The, it's
that
the
was
cruise,
better than Travolta.
Like the cruise solid exhale after all, like a solid line.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like it's very, but it's very cruise.
Yeah,
it's very cruise.
Open the door. Do it now.
It's good.
So I
can't wait to see what you rank this movie as.
Which
in the three categories?
Oh, it's totally in the middle category, 100%. It's because Denzel's so good. No question. If Denzel was bad, if he didn't root the movie for me, then it would be totally ridiculous. But because Denzel is so good in this movie, it's the same thing we always talk about. It's totally absurd in every other regard. It has a hilariously bad villain, but Denzel's so good, and those few scenes are so good that this movie's in the middle category for me.
There are three categories.
Yeah, there's three categories of action movies. There's Totally Ridiculous, which is like Face Off, Con Air, Falls Off a Cliff of Absurdity. There's Totally Legitimate, which is movies like The Fugitive or The Matrix. Mm-hmm. And then there's Ridiculously Legitimate, which is the middle category, just what I'm talking about, kind of a hybrid of absurd and comedic and awesome and engaging. And I think that's what this movie is.
I think so, too. I think it's the middle. And I think the reason why, too, is because there are, like you said, the Travolta is such a cartoon. There's a lot of things in this movie that are just kind of off the wall. Denzel really legitimizes it. But it also, you could see it taking place over a day in New York. Crazier things have happened in New York. You know what I mean? Like some guy kidnaps somebody on a train, takes it for a ride. And the way Tony Scott does it makes it totally legitimate to me.
Absolutely. So you think it's totally legit?
No. I think legitimate in the ridiculously legitimate part.
Ridiculously legit?
Yeah.
What about you, Drew?
I think this movie is totally ridiculous.
Really? Even with Denzel being as good as he is?
Yeah.
Doesn't
There's
matter.
No way they would have this MTA operator talking in a hostage situation. Even, I mean, I do like, they do a good job of like tying things together, even like with the stupid money transfer from A to B with like 20 cars, and the mayor's like, why don't we just use a helicopter?
Why don't we just use a helicopter?
You know?
Chrissy?
They like literally are creating issues in this movie because there's not enough going on.
Right.
This movie is totally ridiculous.
You're such a hater.
I hate this movie.
Hater it.
I don't hate this movie. I do not hate it. It's just not good.
And I'm so
mad. My mom is not a fan.
What do you guys think? What do you guys think? Which category for you?
I agree with Andrew.
Yes, totally ridiculous.
Of course you do.
Of course you agree with Andrew.
Thanks, Mom. But you, Les.
I think it's pretty ridiculous. I think because of John Travolta, too.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
just not very believable.
No, he's the worst.
And the neck tattoo is pretty
it's just
random.
Amazing. That's what it is.
The worst.
And I was put this also in number 26.
There it is, Bateman.
You guys. This will be one of those, like, there's like a couple movies that are on our rankings list where it's very clear that I'm making a point. Like, Edge right. of Tomorrow being like number 4 is very clear.
Yeah, that's, I saw that and I was like, you have that ahead of Die Hard.
Yeah, I had Con Air at like 6 for a while. Yeah, I was like, sure. I can't do it. I love that movie so much.
I do love that movie.
Or like me having Dutch at number 2 on my heroes list. It's just like making a point.
And I said, I was like, who's one? You're like, I haven't found one yet. Yeah. It's like, it's John McClane. John McClane is one.
It's Russell Crowe in Gladiator.
You wanted a miracle. I give you the FBI.
Love Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's the show. That's the end of our show. We're going to give a mug away really quickly to one of our fans that has been kind enough to review us on iTunes.
Nice.
As we said, guys, if we get 2 more, we're going to stop giving mugs away. But if we don't get 19 and 20
review
because we haven't gotten one since last week, we can't give another mug away until we get at least one more edition here.
Yeah.
Because we're not just going to give 18 mugs away until we get to 20. That's not the way it's going to work.
What are we, Pelham 1, 2, 3?
Come on. Yeah. Right? Who'd you get?
He's like, I don't want the show to be over yet. Let's go back into the categories.
I'm going to go to this review number 18, Traveling Back on Time to 1962 by Steven _T1000, clearly an action movie fan.
Yeah.
He says, to bow down to the man, the myth, the legend, and the star of this show, Tom Cruise! Hashtag Anatomy of Cruise.
Anatomy of Cruise.
It's not even
what
like
Cruise movies have you done in here besides Edge of Tomorrow?
We've done MI4, 5, and 3,
okay.
Edge of Tomorrow, and
Minority Report.
And Minority Report.
We've done 5.
Got it.
We've only done 25 shows.
Yeah. And they're like all of the best tracking episodes for the most part. Like they're like all popular.
Yeah.
They're great. We did when we did Edge of Tomorrow, we did our iTunes plug in Cruise Voice. That was pretty good.
That was fun. It was
solid.
Good. That was a good clip. So that's the show. Again, thank you so much for coming and joining
us. Thank you guys so much again for being on.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Pleasures.
Oh, yeah. You're gone.
We'd love to have you guys back anytime. Again, like I said on the episode, you guys pick the movie next time and we'll go to town.
Hell yeah, man. Where can people find you?
At Josh McCuga on Twitter and Instagram and my YouTube channel, Between the Sheets TV.
What's that about?
I have my own talk show.
But I'm saying, what's the talk show about?
Stuff that goes on between the sheets.
Gotcha, okay. Andrew, where can people find you?
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter. Thanks for watching our fucking show!
Yeah. That's going to go like into the sizzle reel.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in there. Ben Bateman, you guys can find me, Ben Bateman Media, Twitter and Instagram. I love doing this show. We'll see you next week.
All right.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.